Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hi, everyone. It's your host, Tim Rutten here. Today, we're kicking off the first episode in a two-part series featuring Abdullah Al-Wabel, Head of Digital Banking and Innovation at BSF. In this episode, we dig into the transformation of the Saudi banking sector, how Vision 2030 is driving urgency and innovation, and why BSF is thinking way beyond traditional banking models to compete in an unbundled, customer-first landscape. Let's dive right in. Abdullah Al-Wabel, super happy to see you here. Thanks for making your way to Amsterdam from Saudi Arabia. And Abdullah is the Head of Digital and Innovation at BSF. Great to see you here, Abdullah. Good morning.
Likewise, good morning to you too as well.
Yeah, maybe a brief introduction from your end. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your role, what you're looking after day to day.
Mainly I look after, you know, the digital banking and innovation department within the bank. So basically what we do is enable our business stakeholders to, you know, offer their products, services in a much more seamless way than they used to in the past, using, you know, technology as a main component to do so, coupled with, you know, principles of, you know, customer experience and innovative UX and UI. So that is the main thing that we do. In addition to also innovation R&D. If that is the correct term. Basically us, you know, scanning the market for anything and then telling our business stakeholders, you know, we can do X, Y, Z, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's one main role is to be reactive and the other one is more proactive.
And we'll talk about both flavors today. And yes, we'll also tackle AI and your view on that later down the episode. But first and foremost, I'd love to start with a bit of a perspective on the region and the market that you were active in as a leader. Mm-hmm. So maybe for starters, if you think about the GCC banking sector, I think what we're all picking up on is that it's becoming increasingly competitive, right? If you look at it from regional hubs like the UAE, looking at Bahrain, they're all positioning themselves as fintech leaders. There's a lot of investment happening in, let's say, the region. How do you see Saudi Arabia differentiating itself in that context, and what opportunities do you see in the region overall? And just unpack it as you see fit.
Yeah, I think it's true that UAE and Bahrain and other Gulf countries are making bold moves in innovation and overall digitization, whether it is in the banking industry or other industries. And for one thing, Saudi is getting inspired a lot by that. So for sure, within the banking industry, I think there is a lot of, you know, first movers, whether it's in the fintech space, whether it's in overall banking technology adoption. Similarly, also in Bahrain. Now, the good thing about Saudi Arabia is we have the economy of scale, and we are in the middle of transformation. So every ideation is very encouraged at the moment, right? So we are trying to get innovative all across, right? That encourages a lot of thinking, encourages a lot of, you know, transformation. But also, one thing that this helps us with is we're not only changing in banking, we're not only changing in the financial industry, but also we're changing in tourism, we're changing in logistics, we're changing everywhere. This gives us an opportunity to find areas of intersections between banking overall and those industries. And because Saudi has that economy of scale, it becomes more relevant, and it becomes more, it makes more sense. So competition is very healthy, but it's also inspiring, and it gives you the opportunity to complement each other and get inspired.
So in a way, that innovative push that you see in Saudi Arabia in total? Is that the 2030, let's say, plan or ambition that has been rolled out?
That it helps you because it also gives context for your innovation, right? There is the 2030 vision that talks about every aspect of your life as a, whether a citizen or a visitor, whatever you are, whichever capacity. And that gives also the opportunity for the banking industry to, you know, see the evolution as it happens, right? You see the plan laid out in front of you across all industries, then it encourages you as a bank or as an investor in general to, you know, find areas where you can plug in your proposition from the financial industry into other industries.
So in a way, it's very helpful that there's a North Star vision for the total kingdom, which you can connect to and drive your change with as well. Has it changed the urgency overall? And maybe the background behind the question would be, before that 2030 vision was rolled out and presented to the kingdom to basically move into, was the urgency lesser there at that until that moment?
I think it's very apparent for even people who are not familiar with the industry, right? With the financial industry in Saudi Arabia. The reason I say this because, you know, 2030 vision has echoed everywhere and everyone is following the progression of 2030 all around the globe. Now, this made or introduced a tremendous pressure on us in banks because the government now is leading the charge to make this change. So all of your government services pretty much are done digitally and you do not need to interact with a human being. So that is a very significant change to how things were, you know, prior to the vision. Now, as a bank, you know, if your customer is used to, you know, renewing their driver license or renewing their passport or getting any sort of government, you know, transaction done fully digitally and straight through processed, puts a pressure on you to give all of your products and services and introduce them in a similar fashion, right? Especially, you know, it is always intuitive to think that government is more complex to change and is more, you know, and government transactions are more difficult to automate than other, you know, processes. So if the government was able to do it, now we are in a situation where, like, you know, we need to follow the same speed and same momentum.
It's quite unique.
Yes.
This is very unique. Like, I'm a bit surprised hearing that they are raising the bar.
Yes.
Set the example. They set the pace. They drive a vision.
I'll give you an example on how that actually changed your customer behavior. Because in the past, customer loyalty was a very, you know, big thing. And it was really difficult to have someone change their bank because, you know, it's not easy for once. And two, you know, there was a sense of loyalty because, you know, I've been with this bank for a period of time, coupled with, as I said, the difficulty of making a change. Then customers usually stay around the bank. So you see, the family is banking with Bank X, the kids and tend to usually bank where their parents bank. Now it is completely different. Now we see customers, you know, especially around the youth segment, jump from one bank to another like very easily because it literally takes them 2 minutes to open an account, a fully functioning, you know, account. So that is one of the things that you know, had impacted you know, us again to try to, you know, mimic and get inspired by. I mean, those government efforts and achievements, but also it also pushed. Put another pressure from the customer perspective because customers are changing and they expect a lot from us now.
Yeah. So it's really the youth population that basically has multiple accounts in multiple institutions, then I imagine. If you think about it from a more, let's say, primacy, like I can imagine it's still the primary bank that you've banked with for, let's say, yourself growing up during your study time when you raise your family. Have you also seen a pattern there that they tap out because they have better alternatives?
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what I meant. Because now, I mean, it is funny because we no longer compete as banks. We no longer compete for the customers. We actually compete on the transaction types, because it is so easy to, you know, change hop from one bank to another. So I'll give an example. During the summer times, usually fintechs or banks compete for, you know, forex rates, right? Who gives the better rates? Because people, you know, tend to travel and etc. Or for example, international spend. Now we're no longer competing for the customer, because the customer comes and bank or use this remittance, for example, solution, or use this multi-currency card or payment solution for the time that they need it, and then they hop to and then they leave it once the offer is or the need is no longer there. So you're not really competing for customer acquisition. You're really competing for a specific portion or a market share in that transaction type pool. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's a very, very interesting situation.
So it's very much unbundled by the customer themselves, because they now have the flexibility to move around and basically choose the bank or choose the institution or even choose the fintech at the moment that is relevant to them for a specific value proposition.
Now it's a bit more difficult to do that. I mean, as a customer, when it comes to, for example, more complex transactions like, you know, lending or, you know, or getting a credit card or things of that nature. But other products or services like, you know, payment solutions or payment services, it's usually very, very, very competitive, and customers are very quick to, you know, swap providers.
I would also say that part with payments processing is highly commoditized. And you also probably will see, let's say, global big tech or, let's say, scale-up fintech that enters into these regional contexts as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as fast in Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure what the...
It's already there.
It's already there.
Yes. It's already there.
Like the Revolut type of players?
Yes. Revolut is already there. Not yet fully operational, but even other, like, for example, from other regions, whether it's Kuwait, whether it's UAE, they are already, you know, starting. Amazon's been there for a long time with their payment services. Other providers as well, yeah.
So incredibly competitive. Coming back to the original question, how does BSF sets itself up for differentiation? Like, where do you feel that the wedge is that you are playing at this point?
Yeah. Well, actually, we're in a very interesting situation, because we have been a bit busy in the past setting up our foundation, because we wanted to, you know, gain that flexibility, right? To kind of follow the customer where they go, right? Without a proper, you know, foundation, and by foundation I mean a lot of things, but mainly, you know, technology and products, you will not be able to, you know, be as quick as the customer, right? So we've been... The way we've seen it is, thought about it is now that we have the right foundations in, we can basically be flexible in adapting or following where customer behaviors take us. This is mainly again around the payment sort of things. But when it comes to customer acquisition, when it comes to lending or the liability, business, we're trying to build a complementary proposition that gives us the ability to keep our customers, you know, with us for a longer time. Yes, they can. It is a very competitive market when it comes to the payment sort of things, but for those things, we still see an opportunity to build a relationship with the customer themselves that cannot be easily, you know, disrupted.
Yeah.
So I think that's how we see it. In terms of, digitization / innovation, we are trying to think how we do things from the customer perspective. As I said, because that's going to govern how we grow. So that helped us actually in driving business growth. And it also, you know, dumping a lot of unnecessary operation along the way as well. Mm-hmm. So that's how we're, you know, positioning ourselves.
Yeah, so it's very much an outside-in perspective. What is the customer actually looking for in the competitive landscape that you just described? With the unbundling, especially of the payments type of operations, right? You see a lot of hopping there between different brands. Mm-hmm. But as a BSF point of view, I think you're saying there's much more value proposition elements that we bring to the table that still uniquely position us while facing the competitive, let's say, pressure in the field. You also alluded a little bit to technology foundations. Mm-hmm. Now, before we go there, a few weeks ago, there was a, I would say, milestone on your end. You launched the new BSF banking platform. There's a whole road towards that moment. Sure. Can you maybe share what has that journey looked like? What was the vision? How did you execute on it? And then step by step, we'll unpack what the lessons learned have been so far.
I mean, it was a very, very, very interesting journey, full of, you know, many lessons learned and very interesting events and stories along the way. For us, it started around the beginning of 2019, or maybe even a little bit earlier during 2018, when we were focused on, you know, building our core banking system. Previously, BSF did not have a core banking system, and which made it a bit difficult for us, to unlock the next, the next set of, you know, banking products and services in a fashion that we aspire to do. So we were, it started when we thought about, you know, implementing the core banking system. The reason I mention this, because it had a very strong effect on everything we did afterward. Because the minute you decide that you're going to do a fundamental change, like, you know, building a core banking system, it is going to impact a lot of other aspirations or ambitions, right? The unique and very interesting thing about BSF is that actually did not end up happening. What I mean is we did not get limited by the fact that we were building a core banking system. So we started the journey to build our core banking system. We introduced a completely new middleware platform. And along with that, we also started rebuilding or revamping entirely our digital platforms, the ones that were customer facing, both on the personal banking side of things as well as the wholesale banking. That meant at the time we wanted to see what was the best option to go with moving forward, because as I said, the whole bank, in terms of, you know, investment, in terms of, you know, human power, was focused on this massive exercise of core banking implementation. It had to be the right choice for those circumstances, but also gave us the ambitions that we wanted to the achievements that we wanted to achieve. And by that I mean, you know, being, you know, positioned very well for growth, for innovation, for scalability, etc., which our previous channels or previous digital platforms weren't able to give us. So we went into a discussion whether, what would be the right approach, the right partner, the right way of revamping our digital proposition, given that it was not only a change of, you know, customer-facing processes, but also it was a complete technology revamp along the full value chain, right? All the way to the, you know, the fundamentals that were also being implemented or changed at the same time. And so the dialogue was, first, did we want to go with a platform already made, and then did an assessment of how much of that platform was matching our needs, our, you know, customer, whether it's customer needs or the bank, you know, expectations, as well as the central bank regulation. Mm-hmm. And then the other approach was to build it on your own, right? Which I think a lot of banks, tend to go through the same dilemma or through the same dialogue right before such transformation. For us at the time, it made a lot more sense to go with a platform, given the fact that we were already busy with a huge transformation. But also, we thought we're not really a technology powerhouse, right? This is not a skill set that was in our DNA as a bank, right? We definitely had a lot of different, you know, capabilities that we were unique in, but maybe we said this one is better, you know, adopted through a platform. And then we went to assess the all of the different platforms at the time, and a few metrics were very essential for us when we wanted to make the decision. And I remember one of the main evaluation criteria was, is this platform capable, or is this partner capable of growing with us, knowing that it is a very dynamic and changing market, right? Whether it's from a technology perspective or from a banking perspective. So that was the first one of the main, you know, questions that we wanted to answer before we selected the partner. A second thing was, how much adoption can I do to expedite my time to market while still having the flexibility and the ability to, you know, customize and differentiate? And that was another reason. Or another criteria that we had to, or question that we had to answer. And then the rest, you know the rest, right? We ended up choosing Backbase for those reasons and many others, but then we kicked off the implementation journey.
Now, the implementation journey is typically where things become interesting, because you go through the buy-build dilemma, and in this case you chose for a partner. That was Backbase in this scenario, which probably was not a surprise given that you're here at the table. But nevertheless, in the actual implementation context, you then need to make certain trade-offs, right? If I look at the global view of all these customers that have gone through the transformative work to move into a platform and to make decisions on the scope, what you often see at the start of these conversations is that there's a laundry list of, this is what we have today. Mm-hmm. That all needs to be in there before we launch. Like a copy-paste almost into the new realm. How did you manage and maneuver that context?
For us, we kind of put multiple things at the same on the same table. One, what is it that we need to, you know, have first day of launching, right? And how did it have to look like? So that was the first, you know, thing that we put on the table. Second is, what did the platform have that we can, you know, adopt and implement or get inspired by, right? So that is the second thing. The third thing, it was on the short term as well as the medium and long term, what are the things that we wanted to do, right? And when we put those three things, it was very easy for us to kind of, you know, kick off the software development lifecycle very quickly. And we didn't spend too much time in inception, intake, and ideation and all of that, because so much thinking was happening already during the, you know, the selection process. So the minute we put those three things on the table, we just, you know, mapped them out, and then we started implementing.
Amazing. What was the timeline until go live?
I think about a year and a half.
A year and a half total.
Yes. But a year and a half, that was everything that we did in the previous platform, much better user experience and design, as well as additional products and services. So, yeah.
So 1.5 year... relatively big bang, in the sense that it's a really total replace, right? That's one of the options that you that you had at the table clearly?
There was a question whether, you know, can we go two platforms in parallel until we fully migrate? But we thought, given, you know, previous experiences from our competitors and peers, we thought, you know, build the whole thing once, because we wanted to, you know, quickly be present and visible in the market. Because usually if you run both platforms at the same time, it's very difficult to do any sort of communication or marketing, and customers will not really see the change immediately. So we chose the second option. Also, it gave us more time because, remember, we're still in the middle of transformation, right? We're still in the middle of core banking. Believe it or not, we are a bank who successfully launched the core banking system. And 2 months or 3 months later was able to launch the digital platform. So it is, other banks failed just to do the first one alone, right?
To begin with, yeah.
Yes, but we were successfully managed to do both, right?
What was unique in that formula then? Like, what's the number one takeaway of how to make that happen? And the core modernization and the engagement layer or the digital channels, like the complete banking platform?
I think the number one reason was the universal sense of urgency to make change within the organization. So everyone wanted to transform. Not only the technology people, also the business, also the support, also the control functions. Everyone wanted that previous reality to change, right? Whether it's introducing the core banking system or any fundamental technology around it, as well as, you know, better solutions for our customers. So I think that's the number one. Second thing, I think focus and as well as, you know, I don't really know how to give it the right word, but basically assigning the right people for the right, you know, task. So we had multiple different teams running those initiatives, but also we made sure that communication was always there throughout the journey, right? So, you know, your core banking is always updating you in...
let's say the group working on the core banking.
Is always giving updates to the people who are working on the digital channels and vice versa. So that dialogue had... and we had some shared, you know, resources that made sure that happened in a very efficient way.
Yeah.
So I think that was also another reason. Yeah.
If I may ask, there's one typical thing that stands out with highly successful customers in the context of Backbase, yourself being one, that is leadership, right? So this was very much a comment on, hey, how do you implement and run the shop and get teams cross-functionally to be aligned and up-to-date of each other? Mm-hmm. But it really does start in the C-suite. Like, is everyone aligned? Is there a top-down commitment? Is there a real mandate towards the individuals that run the program, yourself included? Mm-hmm. Do you sense that as well? Like, does that resonate?
Yeah, I would say also from our board as well, because those initiatives were very closely followed by our board due to their importance, right? Our executive management echoed and translated that attention into, you know, very well governed, you know, transformation journey. So our CEO was always in those committees that gave updates on the progress of whether it's the core banking, whether it's the implementation of the platform. He was always asking the right questions during those, as well as the support of the executive management as well, because everyone, as I said, had that urgency and had that sense of, you know, urgency to transform, and they all wanted to see and be part of that change, you know.
Basically, it tells me that it's incredibly strategic, right? As a business, as a bank, when the CEO is always in those conversations, when the executive leadership is on it, it basically means you're steering the whole ship in that direction. Let's say the contrasting view would be it's a project in the corner of the bank that will never succeed, right?
And the good thing is they gave you the trust, the support, and the guidance, but also they also gave you room to, you know, take that and power that innovation and implementation, right? So it was a very, very nice dynamic that we had with our management.
by the textbook example almost. Like this is what you would like to have, right? Right empowerment, right leadership, commitment, clarity, focus and urgency. Hey, then briefly on the platform itself. It's being described as next generation, completely omnichannel.
Just if you allow me, before please. We go there, because everything we said was positive, right?
What's the challenging part there?
Another main reason why we had this success is because we've made so many mistakes in the beginnings but the good thing is we were very strong and capable of, you know, turning that around very quickly. I'll give you an example. When we first started implementing, we just we took a textbook version of the methodology that we wanted to follow, and that was not a very I don't think that was the right thing to do just like that, because there was a lot of context, especially in a very changing environment, right? So the minute we realized, you know, it has to be our own way or our own interpretation from that theory, then things started to make a lot more sense.
Which theory was that?
That was the textbook version of the agile methodology, right?
Yeah.
And so we took that and we translated it our own way. We didn't really succeed in adopting the textbook version of that, you know, because context was very, very important in our case.
Basically the Spotify model, right? I think one of the passages in that book, or at least in that version that I've seen, the PDF, don't try this at home.
Yes.
As in, apply it to your context. So you're one of many that shares that insight, yeah.
Another thing is how important mindset and skill set at all levels. So don't underestimate any, you know, activity or task that you do throughout this implementation. I'll give you an example. We overtake simple things. I'll give you an example of, having a very strong and good copywriter. Oftentimes you would think, that's something that I can just, anyone can do, right? Turns out, no, you need to have the right skill set there. Of course, it makes more even sense when it comes to technology or leadership or project management, etc. There is a lot of lessons learned. I don't think, 1 hour would be enough to talk about those, but we have a full book of those.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that we, throughout this whole transformation, we were very strong in documentation. And I think that's something that we were lucky to inherit and adopt from our partners, whether it's Backbase or the many different partners we had worked with us throughout this journey.
So I think there's two key ones already. Don't just one-on-one apply theoretical models like the Spotify model back in the day, of course, which is a big thing. And strong documentation or mature documentation, which allows you to scale the initiatives faster and more clean. Great. Thanks for sharing those already.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.